All right. Thank you. Man, I don't know if we can do that.
We're going to talk about very interesting subjects. For example, Snapchat, Molly, Bitcoin, and all the other relevant stuff that you have to understand when you're doing business from Asia.
Welcome to the Global from Asia podcast, where the daunting process of running an international business from Hong Kong is broken down into straight up actionable advice. And now, your host, Michael Michelini.
Thank you, listeners, for tuning in to another episode of Global from Asia. And we are sitting here in Shenzhen, China, drinking some 7-Eleven premium wine from California, Cabernet Sauvignon. And we're lucky to get here Chris Gormley, and he's an international businessman with multiple businesses and lots of great things going on. Chris, do you mind introducing yourself for our listeners today?
I'm Chris Gormley. I run a few businesses. One is an LED factory in China. I also have a brand in Australia that we sell under also, and we're going to hit the U.S. market pretty soon.
Okay, great. I think we still have kind of some newbie listeners and some people anxious to do business globally, especially from Asia. Do you want to explain maybe how you started getting into this?
Before, I worked for a group of guys that they essentially found out what large box guys in the U.S. were selling, and also very, very big box guys like Walmart or Target, Staples or Home Depot or Lowe's or every single giant company in the U.S. and even the medium-sized guys were selling, and then they sent guys all around China trying to make or buy those things to sell back into those guys under a brand they just made up. After a while, I quit that company and started my own company trying to do something pretty similar. That didn't work out too well because I'm not a giant company. I was like a couple of guys that when I first started out. And then after that, I tried a lot of different ventures. I had an e-commerce site where I was selling electronics online for a while.
Listeners like to hear the real deal of entrepreneur and a global entrepreneur like you. So you were trying a few different things, like you were selling, you tried to do maybe what your old previous position was doing, and then you started selling online. Where did you start to actually find the spot that was getting some traction or some real business going?
Yeah, interesting enough, I actually started selling to China. I had guys in China that I knew, and they wanted to buy certain things from other places in the world, and they asked me if I can help them buy those things. So I contacted whatever channel it was that sold those, and I found it and sold it to guys in China.
Oh, cool. Yeah, it's definitely interesting. For listeners, I know a lot of people talk about doing business into China, but I know that's not what you're doing now, so maybe some things have changed since then?
Yeah, so what happens is when you sell to guys here, first it starts out, you know, very simple because they want to get those initial relationships, and then everything becomes very, 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 very complicated. You know, they play a lot of tricks in between to try to get an advantage, and they're really good at that. You know, they'll take 5% advantage, and then they'll, like, you know, learn a little bit more, and then they'll take a 10% advantage, and then eventually it becomes not a worthwhile venture, and then they'll start trying to replicate exactly what you were trying to do. At least that's my experience.
Okay, I just took another sip of my 7-Eleven wine here. I wonder what brand this really is. But okay, well, I understand business in China is tricky, but I mean, I know you definitely are pretty successful now with what you're working on. I would say like a global LED business. So actually, we know you're doing, or I know you're pretty well in Australia. I think, honestly, you're good as a team builder. So maybe you can explain how you got into the Australian market and started getting your niche there.
I had a pretty good friends that I knew that were from Australia. They were get shit done guys. There's a lot of get shit done guys everywhere in the world, but I knew these guys pretty well. One guy in particular wanted to go into doing business somewhere in the world, so I partnered up with him and we started a company. Australia is a higher end market than a lot of other places. You know, everything costs a lot more there than it does pretty much everywhere else in the world. You know, you can spend $4 for a bottle of water at a 7-Eleven, where maybe in China you can buy a bottle of California wine for $10.
Yeah, I learned a lot from you too about the Australian dollar to the US dollar and the costs. I hope to visit Melbourne soon. I guess I'm also curious maybe your structure. This is, you know, we're talking about global businesses, but we also kind of focus on this podcast about Hong Kong. So you're structured in Hong Kong, and I think you have a pretty complex global business, but maybe you could briefly try to give an overview of how you're structured.
Right. So the basic gist is that anywhere in the world you're doing business, anyone in that market that's local, they feel more comfortable dealing with a local business because everything's very complicated to them. That's not what they're used to. If that makes sense, right? If you're not comfortable with the situation, you want to deal with what's comfortable to you. So if you're a Hong Kong guy, you want to buy from a guy in Hong Kong. If you're a guy in the U.S., you like to buy from a guy in the U.S. Even like the idea of sending like a TT or a bank wire to another country, that's complicated and it's scary. If you've never done it before, it gives reservations to people to want to do business with you. If you set up a company in the U.S. to sell to guys in the U.S., that's great. If you set up a company in Hong Kong to sell to guys in Hong Kong, that's great. Initially, I did set up a Hong Kong company. I was selling to guys in China, but Chinese people, they like selling to Hong Kong because it's easy. And they trust that the system of law works. Also, they don't have to worry about, you know, paying taxes in China, and they can hide money there from the Chinese government, along with the other guys that, you know, from the government that hide money there.
Yeah, so I think what Chris means is, like, when I talk about somebody opening a company in a country, I do some consulting, and people say, do I need a company in this country, do I need a company in that country? I think the main reason is for your customer, your sales. So what Chris is saying is customers prefer to pay in the country where they're based. So if they're an Australian company, they feel a lot more comfortable to pay another Australian company. I think another reason is maybe a contract, like a purchase order for risk or for trust, to have a contract with the company in their home domestic country. The other reasons a company might be established in a new market is to hire staff. And I think a third reason is maybe local government benefits. We've talked about maybe loans or grants from governments, and also maybe work permits if you want to live there or have some kind of presence there. So I think those are the three main reasons that you should consider having a company there. So Chris, do you want to disclose how many different companies you operate under now?
Yeah, so we set up a company in the UK at one point, one in Montreal, handful in the US, handful in Australia, Hong Kong, going through the process of setting one up in Singapore right now. And this is really to deal with people in different markets, and they feel more comfortable dealing within their markets. You know, also, even if it's like a large company or a medium-sized company, just their systems, you know, when they pay you, maybe they want to pay by, you know, it's like a local bank transfer. They ask for your routing number and your account number, or can I send you a physical paper check? There's companies that are actually, like, you know, pretty decent size that will send you a paper check. And if I ask a guy to send me a paper check to Hong Kong from, you know, like Los Angeles, then the guy's going to think I'm crazy. Also, if I walk into the bank in Hong Kong, even if they do cash it, they're going to charge you massive fees and it's going to take a month. So, I mean, really payment facilitation and even like terms. If you want to offer terms, if it's a large company, they'll get insurance against the purchase order or, you know, the terms that you're offering. So if you ultimately screw them, they'll file an insurance claim against you for doing that.
I think I would also agree with Chris. I think the main reason to open a company in that country is to receive money from that customer. So let me pour some more wine here from our 7-Eleven special.
We got to get another bottle.
Maybe we have to get another bottle.
It tastes like cherry wine or cherry juice.
Definitely not the best wine I've had. I kind of want to cover financing. We've talked in previous talks about bank loans, government help, or investors. I kind of want to focus on Hong Kong, but if you have other countries you'd like to talk about. But financing or leverage in your business that you've used?
Right. So right now I'm developing some cutting-edge, innovative LED technology products. And the R&D that goes behind that is a lot. Like, you need millions of dollars to really develop it in a way that the market will accept. And there's other companies that are putting hundreds of millions or billions of dollars, you know, to develop something similar. And if you're a small to medium-sized business that's difficult to get, you have to pull money out of your pocket, or in Hong Kong or China or most places in Asia, you have to mortgage your apartment and then your cousin's apartments and everyone else's, like, physical property. And they'll take it from you if you made a bad call for R&D, which probably means that R&D is not going to happen within those places. So right now, I've actually spent the last little while looking at everywhere in the world. Like, what if I go to the U.S. and I say, hey, guys, I want to make this, like, you know, innovative product. What's the process and what's the chances of me getting it versus every other guy that's going for the innovative product? You know, and then so you can set up a company in Hong Kong and you can say the same thing. My response was basically, if I want to do R&D in Hong Kong, they'll give me financing, but the financing is backed by assets, which they will finance, which essentially means that if you buy an office in Hong Kong or a house, which you call an office, then they'll give you finance for that office. But if you default on it, they'll take that property back. So that didn't seem like so helpful within itself to do R&D. And then I looked at every other place, and Australia used to have a pretty good system for it. They just changed government and they took that away. Singapore right now, they offer pretty attractive grants and they offer, you know, like, government-backed investments, etc. So that's really where I'm leaning towards right now.
Okay, interesting. So I think a lot of people are contending between Hong Kong or Singapore. We've read on certain forums. We've heard from different advisors. And I think maybe we should focus on that. I haven't personally in my own business gotten much financial support in Hong Kong. I know it's a good place to have a bank account to do a global business, but I think they do need to do a better job on supporting small or medium-sized businesses such as Chris or I. And so it's interesting that you've talked about Singapore. I know you're opening a factory. I think we should have done this at the beginning of the show, but maybe you can introduce your LED business and what your current business is, which I know is doing pretty well, how you're structuring that.
Right. So I've partnered with a couple of guys from Singapore, and the Singapore company is going to own a factory in China, and then any IP, R&D, basically any real assets of the business is just going to be owned by the Singapore company. And China is essentially going to be the people that put the stuff together that you give them to put together, which really makes sense for the skill set. In Singapore, it's really easy to find people that are smart. In China, it's really easy to find guys that know how to plug Legos into each other. It's true. So that's what we're doing. Singapore guys, we keep all the knowledge, the patents, etc., the real value of a company, because the Singapore government's willing to invest in that and develop that. And in China, the people are going to plug Legos together.
So that's exciting. I know you've done a lot of, I guess we'll call it OEM. We haven't talked about this in the shows before, but OEM means outside equipment manufacturers or other.
Original equipment manufacturer.
Yep.
And then there's like ODM, original design manufacturer.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I think previous to this new Singapore structure and your own factory, you've worked a lot with OEM, meaning you own the design and then you work with local Chinese manufacturers, do your development and manufacturing.
Yeah, this is something that it could make a lot of sense for companies to partner with somebody that has a certain skill set. You know, for example, putting Legos together or even developing a product and you just slap your name on it. The downside with doing this in certain environment, for example, China, could be that if you give away your IP, even if it's protected within certain environments, if there's no enforcement of that protection, then it essentially means nothing. What that really can mean is that you design a product, you pay guys to do testing for it, you do everything, you prove a concept, you buy it enough to make it seem attractive, and then maybe you can find out that product's being sold to somewhere else. It's not a very long-term proposition. So, you know, so that'd be more ODM side. If you're doing OEM, you're essentially going to a factory and saying, hey, guys, you make this product. Can you put my name on the box, you know, and maybe you put my name on the product, you know, and those testing reports, yeah, whatever. No one's actually going to check those if your name's on it or someone else's name on it. So it doesn't matter. And I want to sell it. You could find some decent products that are OEM within China. It's more rare. It'd be more like a JV company that designs something. Maybe a guy starts a sister company to it with that pretty cool design, and then you OEM it from them to get a higher quality product. That doesn't mean it doesn't exist. It just means that it's harder to find that product that's really worthwhile for doing this.
I guess you're more comfortable now with your new structure and working with your Singapore partners in China.
Right. So I'm absolutely utilizing resources in Singapore at the moment. By that, I mean that I'm working with guys from Singapore. And people in Singapore, from my experience, they care about quality. They care about right of law. They actually fill a right of law. So if there is a mistake, they can lose their property or their freedom, and the government actually enforces it. And it's more than that. It's like people actually care what they do. They don't want to, you know, spit on the ground, smoke a cigarette in the restaurant next to you, and, you know, do all those other annoying things that most people in the world, the majority of people in the world think is normal, but maybe people from the West think isn't so normal.
Are you using your Hong Kong Limited for this structure?
My future structure going forward, it's going to be a Singapore company that owns a Chinese factory.
Okay, that's simpler. And I think that's good to note for some people. And I think while we are kind of focusing this on as a Hong Kong business, I know Singapore is a very top, maybe, quote-unquote, contender to Hong Kong for Asia global business. I mean, well, maybe I have to get some more insights from others. But so your main reason for using a Singapore structure is because your partners and because of government programs?
Right. So the big difference is, I'd say if you're a company that wants to sell to China, Chinese people feel comfortable with dealing in Hong Kong. So if you want to sell to China, start a Hong Kong company. If you want to make stuff in China, find a way to protect those assets and also maybe try to find a system that supports you in developing those assets more. And for me, Singapore is offering to develop those assets more than most places in the world at the moment. That said, I've met with some guys in Silicon Valley. They're pretty keen, and they're smart, and they're good at what they do. It's just that it's not as obvious to a guy that's doing business in Asia that system can connect with what you're doing.
So I know you have 11, I think you, I don't know if you said in the show, but at least you told me earlier, is 11 different entities around the world. What do you suggest to maybe a listener today that is still maybe working in their corporate job and want to do business in globally or in Asia? What would you kind of tell them to get started with walking away after this show today?
Right. So it really depends on what you do, where you're buying from, and who you're selling to. If you're buying a product from a distributor in the U.S. and you're selling to guys in the U.S., start a U.S. company. If you're buying stuff from guys in the U.S. and you're selling to guys in China, start a Hong Kong company. If you want to develop innovative products and you just want to go to China because it's cheap to put pieces together, then you have a handful of options. It depends where your funding is coming from and where you want to hold that IP. Do you want to sell your company? Are you doing this because you want to make money? Like, what's your end goal? So I mean, there's a lot of factors you have to take into account. You want to process a credit card, right? You can't, it's almost impossible. It can happen, but it's like economically not worthwhile to have a merchant facility in Hong Kong.
Yeah.
HSBC told me 13%. That's like, what's the conversion rate for food stamps in New Jersey right now from like dollar to like, you know, like that? It's crazy. They basically don't want your business. So if you want to do that, you want to accept credit card payments, do that, and do that in the U.S. or in Australia or Canada or some other place.
We've touched on other shows, and we're going to try to get some merchant accounts options for those in Hong Kong. But definitely those outside of the U.S. is a very high rate, except credit cards. And hopefully over time, that can be fixed.
Bitcoin.
But yeah, Bitcoin is going crazy. I think it's almost at $1,000 per Bitcoin right now. So hopefully those listening are making some money. Okay, for any listeners that want to contact you, Chris, what's the best way or what do you want people to contact?
Right. So if you're looking for a job in China, if you just take your life in the U.S. or any other place in general, or you're just like a person that has some really innovative ideas and you want to work in an environment where the stuff that you're doing actually matters and you actually can develop something that people will use one day and maybe it can actually be like pretty, you know, big or cool or whatever, send me an email at chrisgormley@genesisgm.com, which I said really quickly and you probably don't know how to spell, but Mike will link it, I guess.
Yeah, I'll put it on episode 9. So globalfromasia.com/episode9.
Yeah, so any talent, people that understand logic, it's not so easy to find in China. So, yeah.
Okay, great. So hopefully that's a good opportunity. I know that's definitely a great opportunity for those listening that maybe want to get into Asia or China and learn from some great, great experienced people. So we'll list that information on the blog post today. And or if you heard Chris's email, you could contact him directly. Just note GFA or Global from Asia in your subject line so he knows.
All right, so send me your resume, nude photos, or, you know, you can also add me on Snapchat. I can be contacted by that way pretty easily, and yeah.
So email, naked photos, or Snapchat. All right. Thank you, Chris. That's all we have for today. I mean, I think I've learned something from this show, and I definitely, I'm sure some of our listeners have. So thanks for being here with us, Chris.
We're out of wine, Mike, once
again. And we're out of wine, so we're going to go down to get some more 7-Eleven wine. And if you want to check out any of our photos, we'll put some pictures up of this 7-Eleven wine here. I don't think you can get this in the U.S. You have to come over to China.
It's got to have a different name.
Different name. But
somebody OEM'd a bottle of wine.
OEM brand Spurnia wine in China. So it's just a global world happening. Hope you guys can be part of it. Thank you.
Some words from our loyal listeners.
So one of my favorite things about doing this podcast is
so far has been getting all amazing feedback and insights from friends and listeners. One is we have today is my friend up in Dalian, China, J. Chad Liu, and he gave me a 5-star rating in iTunes. I think it's my first one. And his reads, must listen to for expats in China. Like Mike, I am also an expat startup guy trying to make sense of it all in China. I think many of us face many of the same problems with visas, business licenses, and fund transfers. Thanks, Mike, for sharing with us your experiences and looking forward to more to come. Well, thank you too, Chad, for this feedback, and I'm glad it's helpful for you and others.
To get more info about running an international business via Hong Kong, please visit our website at www.globalfromasia.com. That's www.globalfromasia.com. Also, be sure to subscribe to our iTunes feed. Thanks for tuning in.